The Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast is back, and thank you so much for being with us. He is Bob Laguerre. I am Arthur Arkish, and we are breaking down, some new Bears chatter that's coming from the league meetings in Orlando. Bob, we didn't get to go to Florida. I'm not sure how that worked out. Hub Arkish took that trip, but we were filled in on everything that went on down there. So before we kind of launch right in, how are you doing on this Thursday morning, and what's new on your end of the world?
Well, I got a lot of response from my Bears 7th round mock draft, and even the few people who liked it made the comment that there was no edge rusher included in the draft. I had Tremaine Edmonds going 8th overall to the Bears. And, you know, a lot of people have him rated as an inside linebacker, but I don't think you can talk to any reputable draft evaluator or scout who will tell you that this kid will not be an outstanding player at any position, any linebacker position in any scheme. He can play inside. He can play outside. People who think he can't be an edge rusher, I guess, are missing the point that he measured at 6'5", 253 at the combine and ran a 4.54. That means he ran a better time than a lot of wide receivers and a lot of running backs. And, you know, the kicker to the whole thing is he's 19 years old. This guy in 2 years could be an absolute monster. I don't know that he'll be an impact pass rusher this year, but if that's how a team wants to use him, he will definitely make an impact as an edge rusher somewhere down the line.
Well, Bob, I thought you were going to go in a different direction. I was sure that you were going to bust my balls because I screwed up your first Bears mock draft of the season. And let me make sure I own that for our listeners who may have also checked it out at profootballweekly.com/Bears. Bob's 7th round mock is up there. And yes, the Bears do have 2 4th round picks. And yes, I did screw that up. It's one of the downsides of this slideshow format that we use on the site for these mock drafts. You have to change each photo from imported to ready for web. I won't bore our listeners with the actual specifics, but I do want to make very clear that Bob is well aware of the actual draft picks that the Bears have, and I screwed that one up. So my apologies, and I hope people still enjoyed it. It looks like they did. As far as the Tremaine Edmonds talk goes, though, I think you just absolutely nailed it. Ryan Pace, Vic Fangio, these guys look for traits. They look for physical attributes that can translate to production. I don't think there's a lot of teams, Bob, who do that more than the Bears. When you look at recent picks like Leonard Floyd and certainly Kevin White, guys who aren't necessarily complete players yet, but you project to what they're going to be. And I'm with you. Tremaine Edmonds wasn't asked to do it a ton at Virginia Tech, but a funny thing, Aldon Smith, back in his 2 years at Missouri, his second year at Mizzou, Bob, Aldon Smith had 3 sacks and 4 tackles for loss. He went on to explode. I can't remember if he won Rookie of the Year, but he was on a Hall of Fame trajectory. And the reason I mentioned Aldon Smith, of course, is because he was playing under Vic Fangio in San Francisco. You look at Tremaine Edmonds' pass rush production in his final season, 5.5 sacks, 14 tackles for loss. No, it doesn't blow your hair back, but it's actually better than Aldon Smith's, and we saw what he projected to really right out of the gate.
Yeah, right. Edmonds, 10 sacks in his last 2 years, and like you said, wasn't asked to do that a whole lot. And it's interesting, Arthur, you bring up Leonard Floyd, because Tremaine Edmonds is bigger, stronger, and faster than Leonard Floyd when the Bears made him the 9th overall pick a couple years back. So this is a guy, if you want to play in the middle and chase play sideline to sideline, he can do that. He only had the 10 sacks in the 2 years, but I think his tackles for loss were somewhere in the 20s. So this is an impact guy who maybe, you know, lacks a little instinct at this point and maybe a tiny bit insecure and underdeveloped. But what 19-year-old isn't? I mean, this guy, what he's done at the age of 19 is pretty impressive. And I think this is a guy who, Leonard Floyd is a guy we've seen grow a little bit, and kind of his progress has been impeded by some injuries, but I think this guy could be probably ahead of where Leonard Floyd is now by the end of this season, especially working with somebody like Vic Fangio, who absolutely will find the best way to utilize him.
Bob, I'm drawing a blank, and I'm going to put you on the spot. You may, too. It's okay. Who was the outside linebacker coach? I'm drawing a blank, but the year that they drafted Floyd in 2015, it's not Jay Rogers. That would have been D-line. Do you recall who was there the year that Floyd arrived on Fox's staff? It's a bigger, a big dude, an African American. I'm drawing a blank on the name. It's not the important part here.
I know.
Sorry.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, and I remember when you say a big guy.
Yeah.
During an OTA at Halifax, a defensive back for the Bears ran into him at the end of a play when he was standing still, and the safety got knocked on the ground and came off the field. And the guy who we ran into, and I'm blanking too on his name, just kind of looked down at the guy and said, I guess they don't make him like they used to. But, yeah, I think, you know, whoever the coach is, Vic, obviously, and for the past couple of years at least, has been working with the outside linebackers in addition to being the coordinator. So if they draft somebody like Edmonds, he's going to get specialized interest from Vic Fangio, and that can only help him. And it actually can only help Leonard Floyd, too, because if you've got a guy on the other side, it makes Floyd even more effective.
Yeah, and the reason I mentioned it, it's Clint Hurt, and I apologize, Mr. Hurt, for not remembering
your
name, but I do vividly remember our conversation on that Halas Hall practice field right after Floyd arrived, and Hurt talked about Floyd's speed, and he talked about how, you know, when you get a guy at number nine and he's kind of billed as a pass rusher, that's sort of what everyone gets, you know, honed in on, but he was very specific in mentioning that the Bears wanted Leonard Floyd for his ability to cover, for his ability to go chase quarterback sideline to sideline in a position with mobile guys. So I guess I would just mention that as well, in that Tremaine Edmonds' versatility is probably very, very appealing to these Bears, and a reason that that pick makes a ton of sense. Bob, before we move on, is there one other pick, two other picks from that seven-round mock that kind of jumps out at you and is something you want to share with the listeners as to why what your thinking was there?
Well, my second round pick was kind of maybe categorized as wishful thinking, because I've got him taking Isaiah Wynn.
Yeah.
And probably half the mock draft you look at will see him going at the end of round one. If he slips down there, the Bears would be thrilled with that and would sprint to a podium to make that pick. The other guy who was left off our initial story was Alex Campbell, who's an offensive tackle from Humboldt State. School nobody's ever heard of, because they haven't had anybody drafted in probably 20 years. But this is a guy who is obviously raw and is not faced top competition. But Ryan Pace has said in the past, he doesn't mind guys from smaller schools, guys like Tariq Cohen, guys like the tight end Adam Shaheen.
Right.
He will look at those guys and take a gamble on those guys if they dominated their level of competition, which Alex Kappa absolutely did. He was like a man playing with boys and just manhandled everybody for 3 years. Now, is he going to be facing a different level of competition and maybe take a while to adjust to the NFL level? Sure. This is a guy who's a great athlete. He's 6'6", 300 pounds, and has good movement skills. So if you can take a flyer on a guy like that in the fourth round, maybe develop him for a year or two behind Charles Leno and Bobby Massey, I think you could have something down the road.
And our listeners should make sure they go check out the mock if they haven't already. I'll definitely share it again on social media today. There's a definite theme. Bob likes Senior Bowl players. The Bears do too, so it makes sense. But I counted at least three or four who were in Mobile in January on Bob's list. Isaiah Wynn is on that falls under that category. So does Alex Kappa, the Humboldt State blocker who fared very well in Mobile and would be an interesting fit, I think. You bring in the Humboldt State bra, you got a couple Oregon dudes and Kyle Long and Hieronis Grissu, so you could be making kind of an interesting Pacific Northwest mix there in the Bears offensive line room. But good stuff from Bob, and again, everyone should go check out that seven round mock. They're a lot of fun to do and certainly to read. Bob, a couple other ideas we want to get to here on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, and I should mention he's Bob Laguerre. I'm Arthur Arkish. We will be joined later in the program by Hub Arkish, who is fresh back from Orlando and getting ready to fill us in on some of his big takeaways from chatting with Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace and George McCaskey down at the league meetings this week. But Bob, you had another interesting thing you wanted to discuss today, and that is Trey Burton and kind of just the tight end room overall, and how you think that maybe Matt Nagy is going to look to play things, Nagy and Helfrich, in terms of dusting off his new $18 million investment in Trey Burton, but also probably not neglecting Deion Sims, who got $10 million last year, and Adam Shaheen, of course, who's a second-round pick and will be expected to contribute.
Yeah, I think Trey Burton is the guy. Down in Florida, I think Matt Nagy made it a point to emphasize that Trey Burton's a guy who can and will block, but that's not why they're paying him $18 million guaranteed and $32 million over 4 years. They're paying him to stretch the defense, to run deep down the seam and create mismatches. That's every team wants to create mismatches. I think Matt Nagy emphasizes that more than most people. And he's a guy who, if you want to put a linebacker on him, he's going to outrun him. If you want to put a nickel cornerback on him, he's going to outsize him and outmuscle him. And he's a guy that's going to line up in a lot of different areas. You'll see him lined up in the slot. You'll see him split wide. You'll see him lined up as a traditional wide tight end. But mostly he's going to be an F or a move tight end, which in Nagy's scheme is called a U tight end. All that aside from it takes away from the point that this is a guy who's going to be an integral part of the passing offense. Yeah, you'll probably see him block on occasion. Nagy likes all his wide receivers and tight ends to block. But this is a guy who is brought in to be a weapon in the passing game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I mentioned the dollars, Bob, because I think it's important here. I think you need to follow the money to get an idea of what Ryan Pace and what Matt Nagy envision. And it's fascinating. Only two NFL teams have more money tied up in their tight end room than the Bears. That would be Washington. And of course, they have their star in Jordan Reed, even if he can never stay on the field. And the other one is New England, and we all know the reason there, of course, with Gronk, and they made some other trades to kind of buttress that position as well. But there's a lot more projecting, right, Bob? I mean, Deion Sims got a ton of money. Trey Burton got even more money, obviously. We don't really know what these guys are yet, though, and that's why it makes it – we know that they got to get them on the field to make sure that they're getting the most out of their investment, and we know that Trey Burton, as you mentioned, is supposed to be kind of the mismatch piece, but I think it still makes it sort of hard to try and kind of, predict what number of snap counts or how often they're going to be in 12 personnel versus 11 and so on and so forth.
Well, yeah, and the point that people sometimes miss is early on they were saying, well, can the Bears, are they going to cut Deion Sims because they've got Shaheen and they picked up Trey Burton? But tight end is, many years, the most injured position in the NFL. Guys miss more games due to injury at tight end than almost any position there is. And you need to have at least four on your roster at a minimum. I think every year, even when the Bears didn't really throw to the tight ends a lot, they had multiple tight ends. They still got Daniel Brown, who was re-signed recently, who would be their fourth guy in the tight end depth chart right now. And, I'm sure they'll go to camp with more than four, and probably you'll see four on the 53-man roster once we get into the season. But Burton's a guy who, if I was him, I'd be really excited because every time I hear Nagy talk about the tight end, I hear him kind of liken Trey Burton to Travis Kelce in Kansas City, who's just a monster and puts up huge numbers. Now, Trey Burton isn't nearly as big and physical as Travis Kelce, but I think that's the way you're going to see the Bears use him, is the way the Chiefs use Kelce.
Yeah, and I can tell you, with the help of Football Outsiders, I'm looking right now, Travis Kelce played 84.7% of the offensive snaps last year, almost 900 snaps on offense. Their number two tight end, Demetrius Harris, was at almost 500, so he was on the field almost half the time. And then if we just look over with the Eagles real quick, too, because that's the other one that I think gives us a good idea, obviously scheme-wise under Reich and their head coach there. I'm drawing a blank. Thank you. You've got Zach Ertz at 69% last year, and you got Brent Celek at over 40%. So if we're trying to get an idea of just how much these guys are going to be on the field, and it is worth noting that the Chiefs, after getting Travis Kelce's deal done, they check in, I believe, at number 6 on the tight end payroll league-wide. I use Spotrac for that information. So it will be a lot of fun. But I guess, Bob, is the concern here that just 1 year removed from spending that huge draft investment on Adam Shaheen, that he can potentially be kind of the lost man in that shuffle? Or do you think it's going to be very important, even though he is kind of the low man on the totem pole, both in terms of experience and the money he's getting this year? I mean, the Bears can't neglect a real asset like that, I wouldn't think.
No, and you know, I could see there could be games where Adam Shaheen is the forgotten guy, but there could also be games where he plays a key role. I think what they like about Shaheen is he's big. He's big enough, and they were impressed with his blocking last year, even though he wasn't asked to do that much at Ashland. They like the way he blocked. He's a bigger guy. He's not quite as big and strong as Deion Sims, but he also can run, and he's an athlete. So he's kind of a cross between Sims and Burton. He's got the size to be physical, and he's got enough athleticism and speed to at least be a somewhat of a threat, you know, in a deep seam and play a multiple type role. So I think there's going to be enough opportunities for all three of these guys to play, but I think you will see, you know, depending on what team they're playing and what the game plan is for that week, you might see different guys. All three of these guys might be the big or the key receiver at the tight end position from week to week. I think more often than not, it's going to be Burton, but I think they're going to find ways to utilize all three of these guys.
All right, so Bears fans should be excited, and fantasy football players should be kind of dreading this tight end room, it sounds like. But it'll be a fun mix to see how they all get involved. And it is, you know, important to remember that Adam Shaheen, coming from Ashland University, is a big jump. So maybe kind of surrounding him with these other guys who you've invested a lot in and you know you need to get on the field maybe is a good situation for Shaheen. So we got a couple more minutes on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast with Bob Laguerre. I'm Arthur Arkish, and we also wanted to talk a little bit, Bob, about the D-line position and just kind of where it sits today. You lose Mitch Unrein, and you still don't quite know what you have in Jonathan Bullard or Roy Robertson Harris. Yes, you're excited about him, but not quite sure what's there. You know you've got Akeem Hicks, who has played at a Pro Bowl level last season. Eddie Goldman has flashed dominance, hasn't fully sustained it yet. Just kind of your thoughts on where the D-line room is at right now and where it sort of it fits on the areas of need to continue working on that depth as the draft rolls around next month.
Well, yeah, they've got two studs in Akeem Hicks and Eddie Goldman. Akeem Hicks has shown up a lot more. Eddie Goldman kind of plays the unsung position at nose tackle. Doesn't get a lot of pass rushing opportunities, but has shown in the past that he could push the pocket a little bit inside. The key now is finding another starter. Mitch Unrein never got a lot of notoriety and was kind of an underrated guy. Not a great pass rusher either, but solid as a run defender and played significantly more snaps than Bullard did last year. The Bears had kind of hoped last year that Bullard would take a big step in his second year and claim that starting spot. It never happened. Now they're looking for him to do it again. He's got another year of experience, and he's a bit of an enigma, because you'll see, you know, even during training camp or occasionally in the preseason, we've seen this guy has just got incredible explosion on one play, and then will disappear for 20 plays after that. They need him to be more consistent and, you know, play at a higher level. I think last year he played under 50% of the snaps. They need him to play a lot more than that and to, like, make a lot more of the splash plays that he's made in the past, but they've been too infrequent. And behind those three guys, you've got Roy Robertson Harris, who they're very high on. He's a guy who was drafted signed as a linebacker. I believe he was undrafted, but has grown into a defensive end. He's now 6'7", 295, and they think he's got a lot of upside. But even including him, that's only four. And almost every NFL team now plays with, you know, at least a 5 or 6 man rotation on the defensive line. So they need, if nothing else, more depth at that position.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think one of your late rounders on your Bears 7-round mock sort of addressed that. What were you thinking? I'll let you share the pick and kind of what you were thinking in terms of fit and how it might be a good addition to the mix that the Bears currently have.
Well, Lowell Tulele is Star Latulele's younger brother, and in his first year was super impressive, probably the best year he's had. He went downhill from there, and it kind of there was an inverse correlation with his weight. The bigger he got, the less effective he became. He's a guy who, if he can get him to push himself away from the buffet a little bit, could be a solid player. It is never going to be a pass rusher, but could be a real stout run defender in the middle, a guy who could spell Eddie Goldman a little bit. Strictly at this point, is a two-down player at best. And he's a two-down player if he gets in better shape. He's probably or was around 340 by the end of the season. If he's at 320, he can be an effective player and help you out in the rotation. And, you know, in the seventh round, there's no such thing as a seventh-round bust. So if they want to take a flyer on a guy like that, I think he could help them down the line.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then let's just wrap up here today, sticking with the D-line for another minute or two, Bob, and getting back to Eddie Goldman. He's entering year four. He's eligible for a new deal. He's played 15 games in two of three seasons. Hasn't matched the pass rush production that we saw yet as a rookie, but I think most would say that last season was his most complete NFL campaign thus far. He's 24 years old. How big of a priority should extending Eddie Goldman right now be for the Bears, do you think?
Well, I think it has to be. Akeem Hicks is locked up for a while now, but he can't do it alone. And they need to have him in the middle. As you mentioned, he's never going to put up at that position impressive-looking statistics. But if he's on the field for 15 games, and another key point, as you mentioned, he's only 24. Yeah. He's already had 3 years of experience, and for the most part has been healthy, has been nicked up a little bit here and there, had a bad ankle the 1 year that really limited his play for at least 2 months.
Right.
I think he missed four or five games and then was half speed in four or five others. If he's healthy, he's only 24, he could be a centerpiece of your defense for a long time.
Yeah, that we're in total agreement on that, Bob. I think there's a chance. I know that nose tackles don't, you know, typically become household names per se, but look out for Eddie Goldman. I think he could be a potential star, and for that very reason, I say this often, whether it's on this podcast or really anywhere you listen or read my work, is that NFL teams should always look to get to guys early about extensions if they truly do believe in them. It's a great way to save money, and it's a great way to buy, you know, to store up goodwill with those players too. So I've been pretty outspoken about my feelings on Adrian Amos. I know he's another candidate for an extension this offseason, but I think at the top of the list it needs to be Eddie Goldman, and you lock that thing in with Akeem Hicks for years to come. It'll be interesting to see if they do get that deal done. Bob Laguerre, that's going to do it for our portion of the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast today, but we appreciate you very much and look forward to chatting with you again next week and talking more Bears on the PFW Chicago podcast.
Okay, Arthur, take care.
All right, thank you, Bob.
If you're looking for a website to keep you up to date on all the latest news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, look no further than ProFootballWeekly.com. It's the place for all the best news around the league. You'll find breaking news, hard-hitting columns, video, photos, podcasts, and more. All 32 teams, 24/7, 365 days a year. While you're at it, catch up with all things NFL in our newsletter. Our NFL Daily Update will send you all of the news you need to keep up with the pace of the NFL. You'll get news, analysis, and more sent right to your inbox at noon, Monday through Friday. Sign up now to start getting NFL news during the week. Pro Football Weekly, bringing the best coverage in the NFL to its readers since 1967. Are you following us on social media? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ProFootballWeekly. Then head over to Twitter and follow PF Weekly and never miss an NFL update. There are plenty of ways for you to enjoy Pro Football Weekly, whether in print or online. If news breaks in the NFL, don't miss a thing and keep it at ProFootballWeekly.com.
Up next on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, pleased to be joined by Hub Arkish. He is just back from Orlando. And Hub, how was the weather? I guess you maybe would have wanted to take that trip a couple months ago. It's actually starting to get nice back here now, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was typical Florida weather. Actually, a little rainy about an hour before the annual owners' receptions. It's one of the big moments of these meetings where everybody gets together in one space, but it cleared up. And other than that, you know, typical Florida stuff. Owners walking around in casual resort wear that you're not used to seeing them in. Great deal of media. It's grown as a media event significantly in just the last 5 or 6 or 7 years. And as owners' meetings go, it was really exceptionally uneventful. There wasn't a whole lot to report. They fixed the catch rule. Everybody knew they were going to do that. They created this new controversial rule about penalties for any player on the field lowering his head to make contact. It probably will develop as just as difficult a penalty to enforce as the old catch rule was. So it's almost like they got rid of one problem and created what may be a newer one, but we'll have to wait and see, give them the benefit of the doubt on that. And other than that, very little. I think the one thing that really jumped out at me is we knew going in that this group of owners is split. I don't know if it's evenly or if it's a slight majority on one side or the other, but they're very much split about what to do about player protests and particularly the national anthem. And what came out of this meeting to me is they have no intentions of coming up with a blanket anthem policy, this idea that the president or certain conservatives, you know, want them to force all players to stand in a certain way for the anthem, or on the other side, the idea that players should be able to do whatever they want. There is no consensus opinion on this, and it's pretty clear to me, led by Roger Goodell, that they're not about to come up with some type of ruling or plan that they can't enforce and just end up with more problems. So they clearly are not responding to Donald Trump's threats and leverage and bullying. And I'll be curious to see as we get closer to the season how much more of that there is. There's tremendous excitement from the owners about the stadium that Stan Kroenke is building out in Los Angeles. They announced that not only will they have their new football palace for the Rams and the Chargers, but they will be moving their entire NFL network operation into this currently under construction facility as well. Couple other minor rule changes and nothing, not a word about the ongoing rift between Roger Goodell and Jerry Jones. You know, there were reports 3-4 weeks back that Goodell was about to drop a multi-million dollar fine on Jones. Nothing has happened. It didn't come up at these meetings. And so, you know, anything that could have been discussion worthy or created a lot of buzz just didn't happen.
All right, Hub, before we're going to talk Bears, obviously, primarily. I appreciate the good owners meeting sort of recap. But before we launch into what you learned from Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace and chatting with them, you mentioned the national anthem deal, and I believe I read that George McCaskey let it be known to his players his feelings on the matter, but then also was pretty clear to point out that they are free to do what they want. Can you just tell the listeners, specifically as it relates to the Bears, what your take is on where George McCaskey stands on the matter and whether he kind of handled it properly amid all the controversy last season?
Yeah, I mean, I guess for purposes of our Bears podcast this week, the nice thing I was meaning is get to spend really the most one-on-one time anybody's had with Matt Nagy. We spent an hour with him on Tuesday morning and got to know him a little bit, and then got to spend about a half an hour with George McCaskey as the meetings wrapped up, and about 45 minutes to an hour with Ryan Pace on Tuesday, on the second day of the meetings. And so a really good chance to take the temperature of where the organization is at from the ownership level, from the management level, and from the coaching level. And relative to conversations with George, he pretty much echoed my assumption that there's nothing imminent coming from the league in an overall anthem plan, but the Bears' stance is what it's been from day one. He will not share with the public what he has privately told his players about what the McCaskey family thinks and feels and would like to see happen. But what he will share is that he has told the players that it's America, they're free to do what they think is right. His only request is that whatever they do, that they do it together as a team, that they make it unanimous. And he was very proud of the fact that last year's Bears team did have their stance on the anthem, which was to lock arms and stand as a group, and that everybody participated, and that they were consistent, unanimous throughout the season. And he said that's what we asked. He was very proud of them for doing it, and that the McCaskey family intends to support their players in any way that the players need to be supported relative to this particular situation.
He's Hub Arkush. I'm Arthur Arkush. It's the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. I forgot to mention at the top when I was chatting with Bob Laguerre, you can catch us, and you should check us out on iTunes, and make sure you're subscribed to the podcast, both the PFW and PFW Chicago podcasts, and leave us a rating and a review while you're there. We really do appreciate that. Hub, one more as it relates to just kind of the league-wide changes or the league-wide stories from Orlando. This new lowering of the helmet rule, what's your understanding on whether Danny Trevathan would have been ejected from that game in Green Bay in primetime last year for the hit on Devontae Adams?
Well, that's really part of the issue here, is that there was an immediate backlash from media and from some players who spoke out about this is a bad idea, it's not football, it's going to change the game. And the point that Roger Goodell was very careful to make with us is that they have not yet decided the exact wording and exactly, you know, what will constitute an ejection-worthy penalty as opposed to just a 15-yard penalty. And
right,
so
right.
They've decided that in dealing with the safety of the game and in dealing particularly with the concerns about brain trauma concussions, they're going to create this rule that does not allow the lowering of the head, but they still haven't worked out the details yet. I think that the assumption, and Goodell did tell us enough to suggest that this is likely, is that it will be monitored and instituted very similar to the targeting rule that they currently have in college football. And that's one that has created some controversy, you know, as to the decision of, well, was that really targeting? Was that worthy of an ejection? But that's where they're going to be. Their starting point is at, and we really won't know any more about it until they meet again in Atlanta in May.
Okay, and I lied. I do have one more just because it does relate to Devin Hester. He is going to be in Canton one day, and it does sound, Hub, like the kickoff is on the verge of extinction. Nothing definitive yet, but listening to Mark Murphy talk about it, they said it was basically an ultimatum for teams. If you can't teach this better, or if we can't eliminate the injuries because they're happening at a much higher rate, according to NFL data, on kickoffs than any other play in the game, that it could be removed very, very soon. Just kind of your thought on that, and if I have the correct read on that from kind of watching things from afar this week.
Well, I think you're correct on everything except the last part, that it could be removed very soon. There are diehards, there are conservatives, there are traditionalists. And this would be a watershed moment if you took the kickoff out of football. And so even though it may make great sense, it takes 9 votes, 9 owners to defeat any proposal they want to make. They've got to have the 24 owner, 75%, I guess technically you'd call it a quorum because it's more than a majority. And I think to do something that radical, I don't know if they're there yet. There's no question that there are concerns about it as possibly the most dangerous play in the game.
Right.
But to take the kickoff out of the game, it's not the same game anymore. So I don't think it's going to happen in the very immediate future.
All right, let's get to some Bears-specific stuff. And, Hub, let's start with Matt Nagy. You know, it's always interesting to see a rookie head coach down there among his more experienced peers, or at least I would think it's interesting. I've actually never been to the league meetings in Orlando, but just your thoughts on how comfortable in his own skin Matt Nagy seemed, and your early impressions on what he had to say, because he does seem like he is going to be a lot more candid than his predecessor will call it when talking really about anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's an impressive guy. He seems to be warm, engaging, certainly loves the sport, loves his job, and has the appropriate, I think, understanding of the magnitude of this opportunity that he has. And he went out of his way to point out, and he gets that it's not just one of 32 opportunities, but it is the original heritage franchise in the National Football League. And I think Bears fans will come to appreciate that. One of the things that was interesting to me is that he talks about it and describes it in a way that comes across as a real, you know, love for the game and the value of the Chicago Bears' place in that game, as opposed to, you know, with Lovey and Trestman, it came across as, yeah, we know, you know, it's the Bears and there's a big Packer rivalry and we're going to do this or that. But he really does a better job of his expressing his understanding of what the Chicago Bears organization should mean to the game. When you ask about him beyond that, everybody knows that the most impressive coaching tree in the NFL right now is Andy Reid's. Whether that's ever going to match a Paul Brown, a George Halas, or a Bill Walsh, we'll see. But it's a pretty impressive tree right now. And Andy Reid called Matt Nagy the best head coaching prospect to ever work for him as an assistant. That's pretty high praise. And so when you get to visit with him, you begin to see it. I mean, is he comfortable in his own skin? Absolutely. Is he confident? Yes. Is he overconfident or cocky? No, it doesn't seem that way at all. And he's got a really interesting approach, and he went out and brought in some high-powered people. I mean, the ability to be the head coach, but share the operation of his football team with Vic Fangio. You know, depending on how this works out, you're going to at some point hear the Mike Ditka, Buddy Ryan comparisons. Beyond that, he brings Brad Childress, who's a former successful head coach with the Vikings, who was also his co-offensive coordinator in Kansas City. He's not threatened by that at all. He goes out and gets Mark Helfrich, who's one of the brilliant young college football minds, and brings him in with his expertise being in a different scheme than what he wants to run. And so all these things that he's doing, very impressive. And the makeup of the rest of the staff, Harry Hiestand in particular, we'll talk about George McCaskey in a little while. Actually, maybe it was Ryan Pace. I can't remember which one of them said it, but they said that he may be the best offensive line coach in all of football. And that's not just Bears people you'll hear that from. He's a very impressive hire. And so I think coming away from this longer extended visit with Nagy, probably more impressed than I was going in, and I was impressed going in. He appears ready, you know. Now, the proof is on the field. He hasn't even run his first practice yet. So, yeah, we'll see. But all the early indications are very promising.
Yeah, nothing excites me more when I see a promising rookie head coach get hired than to see him have the wisdom, to have the humility, to surround himself with experienced people who've done it before, who can help him. And we've talked about it a lot on this podcast, but I think it's very, very encouraging. And the specific examples to which you just alluded are really kind of hit it on the head. So, Hub, what about the football side of things? We'll get to Ryan Pace and George McCaskey in a minute, but because we now have one of these young head coaches who realizes that he's not protecting any state secrets, I just kind of honestly very quickly skimmed the long transcripts from Pace and Nagy, but what can you tell me? Give me a football nugget that he kind of threw you guys to chew on that we can share with the listeners that kind of got your juices flowing a little bit.
Well, one other thought just on the front end that occurs to me as we're talking is that he doesn't look anything like him, doesn't sound anything like him, but his approach and the way he carries himself is almost reminiscent of Sean McVay a year ago. He's a little bit older, but still young as head coaches go. And that exuberance, that excitement, that commitment, and that willingness to take a back seat to impressive people. You look at the staff that McVay put together, probably not as impressive as staff, but all those signs are there, and that's encouraging because of what McVay did. One of the things that was super refreshing was he explained to us in detail exactly how he intends to use Trey Burton, how he intends to use Taylor Gabriel, how he intends to use Tariq Cohn. And you never got any of that from the two prior regimes, the three, actually. You can throw Lovie Smith in there, too. You got to go back to Dave Wannstedt for the last time we had a coach that was just, I mean, Dick Duran was great to work with and one of the best people I've met in 40 years on the beat. But even he, you know, wasn't that, you know, forthcoming or detailed when it came to actual strategy discussing players. You go back to Lonnie in the 90s before we got this much actual information as Nagy was willing to share. Now, that is going to lessen. There's no question about that. And one of the things, in all fairness, that I don't think the media ever properly conveyed to Bears fans, because some of it was probably our own frustration, maybe even selfishness, is that some of the John Fox refusal to communicate came from the Bears organization, their public relations group, their communications people, and it kind of became, in part at least, a philosophy of the football team. Ryan Pace is very close to the vest. You know, we'll get to that in a minute. He's not all that anxious to share all that much either, and it is kind of you know, a new trend around the NFL. It's not something that just happened in Chicago, so I would not expect Nagy to continue to be as upfront as he's been to this point, but I do think it's going to be a much more open and refreshing relationship for him and Bears fans, because he is going to communicate with them through the media better than his predecessor did.
So one follow-up to that, LeGarrette and I talked pretty extensively about Trey Burton in the tight end position, but I'm dying to know, what did he say about Tariq Cohn? There were the rumblings that I never really believed that the Bears could potentially trade Jordan Howard for Jarvis Landry, I believe was the trade scenario that was thrown out there. But just what do you say about Tariq Cohn? What do you say about the running back position and how maybe that mix can work out?
Yeah, the Howard for Landry thing was a complete non-story, and I don't know where it came from, but there was never any possibility that was going to happen. They like Jordan Howard. Now, what I have heard, though, is that there may be people in the organization who are not convinced that Howard is a franchise back. That's a long way from saying he's not good enough or can't be our starter.
Sure.
But there are some who aren't sure that they couldn't get a more dynamic, better fit for what they want to do. I think for now, it is very much he was clear Jordan Howard number one, Tariq Cohen number two. And his point with Tariq Cohen is that they intend to line him up as a receiver. They intend to line him up as the feature back in the offense. They intend to have him and Howard on the field together at times, possibly even a two-back look, which we didn't see much of last year. And that he believes that with Tariq Cohen and Taylor Gabriel, the two of them, they could be one of the most explosive offenses in the NFL, because even though one is a running back and one is a wide receiver, they have very similar skills and assets and styles of play.
Right. That's exciting for sure. And I actually do have one more quick one, Hub. I was getting this question on Twitter last night. I'm throwing you a bit of a curveball here. I don't think it's going to happen. This is a hypothetical and an unlikely one. But what happens if Saquon Barkley's still on the board at number 8 when the Bears are drafting next month?
You take them. I mean, you know, unless Quentin Nelson and Minkah Fitzpatrick are still there too, you've got to take the best football player you can. And Ryan Pace knows that. Now, Ryan's been interesting in his first three drafts. He has gone strictly traits and high ceilings in the first round, and then he gets into subsequent rounds, and he goes to a more traditionally successful style of drafting the best football player available. And there's something to be said for that argument. You go for the home run early because you may get a superstar, and then you get the guys you build your football team around after that. So now right. As you look at this draft, and if in fact three or four quarterbacks go ahead of them, I don't think there's any argument from anybody that the, let's say, four best football players in this draft, or maybe it's five, and not necessarily in this order, are going to be Saquon Barkley, Quentin Nelson, Roquan Smith, Minkah Fitzpatrick, and Bradley Chubb. And probably Chubb is number five. Well, the Bears are picking 8th, okay? So if three or four quarterbacks go in front of them, that means at least one or two of the five best players in the draft are going to be there. And that's the guy you got to take, you know. And if there's more than one of them, then it's just whoever's higher on your board. So let's say that the Giants or the Colts do take Quentin Nelson, which I think is very likely to happen. Let's say that the Broncos don't go quarterback and they take Minkah Fitzpatrick. At that point, Saquon Barkley is probably still there because Bradley Chubb will not be. He's going to go to the Browns either at 1 or 4 if he's still there at 4. If Saquon Barkley is there at 8, you've got to take him. And I don't think they'd hesitate for a minute. And then they would try and figure out, do you get more value by dealing Howard, or you just go into the season with all three of them? Because that would be pretty scary for a lot of opposing defenses.
It would be, Hub, but I'm too scared. I'm in the minority here. I took a lot of crap on it for Twitter last night. I would not take Saquon Barkley. I would trade down, and if the Bears were bent on trying to find their next game-breaking running back, I'd rather have Rashad Penny in round 3. I'm just not into round 1 running backs anymore. But again, I'm in the minority, and I totally understand your thinking on that. So, and a lot of people think Saquon Barkley has Hall of Fame upside, which I get. If you're going to make the ultimate luxury pick, you'd want to do it with someone with that type of upside. But I just think it's too risky. So it's just my personal opinion on that one. But
here's the problem.
Yeah.
There's two problems with that. Number one, I don't disagree with you on Saquon Barkley. I have a concern that he is not quite as good as some folks have him ranked. I think he's one of the top 10 or top 15 players. But I wasn't talking about my top 5. I was talking about the consensus top 5.
Sure.
And I have to assume that the Bears people are going to be with that. But the bigger issue with what you just said is that, and I talked to Ryan Pace about this specifically, so this may be a segue to where you're going next if you want to get to the Ryan conversations, is just because you want to trade down or because it makes sense to trade down, it's not guaranteed. I mean, and you don't control it. If you don't have a willing partner out there, if you don't have somebody with a serious desire for that 8th pick, because if you're trading down, coming up from behind you, and they're giving away valuable resources, you can't make that happen. And so they could very well be sitting on the clock at number 8 with no ability to trade down.
Sure.
And now you've got Nelson and Fitzpatrick and Chubb are already off the board. You may be obligated to take Barkley because it could be that there's a huge gap between him and the next guy on your board.
Oh, yeah. No, I get it. It takes two to tango, and I did write it that way on Twitter. I said if I could trade down, but I would just counter that by saying there's probably not more than, what, five or six backfields in the NFL, or I should say running back rooms in the NFL that are more talented as they're currently configured than the Bears. So I just, that's why I view it as such a luxury pick, and that's why I would have to think that there would be a number of teams willing to trade up and get Barkley. But again, we're not going to spend this whole podcast talking hypotheticals. Let's do that segue, Hub. We only got a couple minutes left on the PFW Chicago podcast with Hub Arkish, but I do just want to very quickly get to maybe your biggest takeaway from your chat with Ryan Pace and maybe your biggest takeaway from chatting with George McCaskey, because that's pretty unique access you had this week with both of them.
Well, I think with Ryan, he is, for the first time in his tenure as the GM of the Chicago Bears, beginning to be comfortable with his existing roster. You know, everything when Packer was coming in and cleaning up the mess, and Lord knows Phil Emery and Mark Trestman left of a mess. But when you see what they've done, everybody's focused on these seven free agents, right? Six or seven other, you know, teams' free agents that they signed. But look how many of their own went out of their way to get done. I mean, he felt it was a priority to have Kyle Fuller and Prince Amukamara here. And then they even brought back Marcus Cooper, which I think is a big under-the-radar move that nobody's talking about. They brought him in last year off a really good season in Arizona. And he was the front runner for that job that Prince Amukamara took. He got dinged up early in training camp. He never recovered. He had a horrible game. I can't remember, it was the Steelers maybe. I don't know which game it was. And he had a lost season. And so they were smart at the end of the year. They said, well, we're not going to continue to pay you what we were paying you. But, you know, go test the market. If you don't like what you find, we want to talk. So they've brought him back. They've brought Bryce Callahan back. And a lot of people had them drafting a cornerback in the first round. I just can't see that now with their top four corners back from last year. You look at Sam Acho. I would have rather had Christian Jones, but you know, I don't get paid for those decisions. Ryan Pace does. They've retained him. It was really interesting when talking to him about the offensive line, because everybody's focused on Quentin Nelson. They think Eric Kush, who's coming back off of injured reserve last year, can win that left guard spot, because with Sitton gone, they'll probably just leave Long at right guard now. So, you know, not only does this look like a good free agent group, not only does last year's draft class look like it might have been something special, depending on how these guys develop. And it's way too early to say that. I'm not saying it was something special. I'm not convinced Mitch Trubisky is a franchise quarterback. I mean, everybody's acting like he's already been to his first Pro Bowl. No, he was much better than we thought he would be in his first year, but he's still got a lot to prove. But the point is that Pace strikes me as a guy now who is feeling the cumulative effects of his first three drafts and his first three free agent classes. While they've had some misses in free agents, you look at a Nakeem Hicks, a Danny Trevathan, a Bobby Massey. You know, they've come up with some pretty Prince Amukamara. They've come up with some pretty good football players too. But what I'm getting at is the cumulative effect. I think for the first time, Ryan Pace, you know, feels like that he has a team that maybe can compete if this year he continues to make the right moves.
Oh, man, I so want Eric Kush to emerge as a more than competent starter, just because the legend of Jeff Fisher would grow even another notch after the Rams cut him from what was one of the worst offensive lines in football a couple years ago. Hub, just on the way out, and thank you so much for the time. I didn't mean to keep you for this long, but I really liked your George McCaskey column last night. Our listeners can check it out at profootballweekly.com/Bears. Your thoughts on George McCaskey? Everyone was kind of drawn to the orange jersey love, but McCaskey had some more meaningful things that came out of his chat with the media than that.
Yeah, and it's funny because, as you mentioned, the column went up on Wednesday, and of course Thursday morning I was hearing from the haters and, oh, the McCaskeys are the problem and how can you like this guy. I don't know how anybody could not like George McCaskey. He doesn't pretend to be general manager material. He doesn't pretend to be a coach or a football savant. What he is in his mind, I believe, I don't think he would take offense to this, is the keeper of the family legacy. And what he wants more than anything for Bears fans and the people of Chicago is to win and win consistently. You know, by ownership standards, he's still, I don't want to say new in the job, but he certainly hasn't failed yet. And he wants this to be the right regime. And when you get him to talking about the Bears and their place in the history of the league, it's interesting, you know, next year, 2019 will be the 100th season. The anniversary of the NFL is 2020, and the Bears were the charter franchise. And yet the Bears are also also preparing their own 100th celebration. And I asked them, so are these two going to run parallel? Are you merging the two, or will you have your own separate? And he said, no, we think that the Bears are special enough that we want our 100th anniversary celebration to stand on its own, but we'll work with the league as well. And so my takeaway is that he is far more involved in the day-to-day operation than Bears fans realize, but it's as an observer and it's as kind of the keeper of the trust. He does not try and get involved in football decisions. He tries to hire the best people he can, he tries to give them all the assets they need. Certainly nobody can look at, you know, the Bears spending and free agency and on their own guys like Kyle Fuller and pull out the cheap thing. They're historically in the top third of the cap spenders every year. And now he just hopes very strongly that he's got the right people in Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. And from there, he's doing the same analysis we are. He was asking me questions, other media guys questions about what our observations of Nagy are so far. But he knows the history of the organization like the back of his hand. He revels in it, and he really wants this team to win. And when you spend time with him, it's so obvious. He's wearing it on his forehead, and you want to see him win. I'd like to see good things happen for him, because George is he's the best combination of the eight McCaskey brothers, and that he can be all business. He can be very dry and very glib, but he's also got an excellent sense of humor. He's very down to earth, very easy to communicate with, and I think a good, if the Bears win, Bears fans are really going to start to gravitate towards him, because he can be a great ambassador for the team. The problem is that the record's been so off for the last 3, 4, 5 years that it's been tough.
Yeah, no question. Awesome stuff from Hub Arkish. Again, I already kept you too long. I am going to let you run, but make sure you catch up on all of Hub's columns from Orlando. They're all available at ProFootballWeekly.com and ProFootballWeekly.com/Bears. And Hub, we'll have you back on the show next week. Really appreciate all your insight, and hope you enjoy the rest of your Thursday.
All right, Arthur. Take care.
That is Hub Arkish. I am Arthur Arkish. This was the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Thanks so much for being with us again this week. Excuse me. Check us out on iTunes. Thank you to our producer, Dan Mott, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again next week.